Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc. in Southern California.
Welcome, this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, it's great to have us together again. Time to talk about presentation design. So how's everybody doing this week? Anything exciting in your worlds?
Last week, I spoke at the Presenters Network in New York City. It's becoming an annual one-day get-together of local presentation professionals run by a guy named David Grouper out here. And it's good. It's so rare for us all to get together. Not at the presentation summit. That's usually the only place. So it's a one-night thing. And I spoke about new features in PowerPoint and encouraging everybody to get onto Office 365. And more people are. So it's good.
It's kind of like Adobe Creative Cloud. You kind of have to be there if you're going
to
use all the features.
But it's, you know, now, you know, you can actually demo stuff and say, you only get this if you're on 365. So it's becoming harder and harder not to. And a couple, and more than one person came up and mentioned that they were fans of the podcast. So
very
that was
fun.
Nice.
You're a celebrity.
And I said something we have to mention to people. If you do love it, please do us a favor and give us a rating on iTunes.
Well, let's see here. So many great things are happening. Just this past week, we finished the interview process for two new staff designers. Well, they're here on a contract basis, actually, but hopefully that'll lead to full-time, long-term positions with our amazing design team. It's not quite like Survivor, but everyone on our team actually does have a say in the two review cycles while everybody's on contract. So, you know, we want to make sure everybody gets along, has a, you know, it's a great office environment. We don't want to ruin that. And I will say that I just totally despise the whole hiring and interviews and reading through just literally hundreds of resumes that are sent in. It's pretty tedious and not what I got in business to do. So, but we're through that and we've got a couple of great people. Very excited about that. But what also is not happening, and this is like amazing to me, is that I'm actually home and in the office for the entire month. I have one travel project in all of August and it happens at the very end of the month and rolls into the following one. But then September, October, November, I'm pretty much nonstop on shows. So, there's a lot happening and some of it's great.
I feel your pain in that interview process. I'm sure you've discovered that a lot of people who say they know PowerPoint don't know PowerPoint to your standards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in presentation design software in general, but I too went through that process. I've just brought on two designers as subcontractors. And because I work with subcontractors virtually. I hired an organization called Power to Fly. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
No. Well, it's another agency, I guess, but it's all done. Their goal is to facilitate the subcontractor, the working environment for women, by the way. Men can apply as well, but women across the globe. As a matter of fact, I interviewed a woman from Texas who is currently living in Dubai, just to give you an idea of the scope. So this organization is allowing me to reach all over the world to find talent.
And you're finding the talent meets up with the needs?
It continues to be the same challenge.
Okay.
People say they know PowerPoint. I get PDFs. While I understand a lot of the PowerPoint that I'm being shown or the presentations I'm being shown are proprietary, I ask that they at least during an online interview, show me the PowerPoint and, you know, I take a look at the back end, that kind of thing. And of course, we're able to uncover that they don't know it as well as they think they do.
That's so key. I get PDFs and just online stuff all the time. It's like, I have to see that you understand how to build things correctly.
Exactly.
We just take a whole different approach. We don't even put PowerPoint in there. We interview totally on, completely on design talent, personality, and kind of desire to work. in the area and in the field. And then we train on presentation.
You're training. And so, I don't have time to train. I just don't have time to train. I mean,
but Troy, that also opens you up to so many more resumes if it's just straight graphic design, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're definitely have a criteria base, and then everybody comes in and we have a couple hour, skills test where we have like a mock-up job that can be done in, you know, less than 2 hours. And it does include a PowerPoint component just so we can figure out what we're working for or we're working with. But yeah, it's just kind of our approach has kind of evolved into, we want the person and their creative aspirations, not the actual PowerPoint skills, because they're just not going to match our style to begin with. But let's talk about news.
Well, I feel like we're often talking about Wall Street stuff, but Microsoft did far exceed their Wall Street earning expectations a couple of weeks ago for the last quarter, and their stock definitely jumped up. But it's not just a financial story. It's because CEO Satya Nadella is in his third year and apparently is doing quite well. So this whole sort of moving to the cloud, that's his big push. Wall Street is saying, yeah, that's the right decision. And we're seeing that a lot, you know, down, it filters down into all the products and everything. So this whole new cloud strategy for Office and all products is working. Another just sort of small update, well, kind of big update actually, but it's under the hood for the Mac, is Mac PowerPoint has just moved from 32-bit to 64-bit in the latest update. And I'm not going to get into all what that means. I'll be perfectly honest, I don't completely understand 100% what it means. But what it does mean is it's a much more stable, powerful platform. And if you have been on Mac 2016 or, you know, through Office 365, and you've had crashing issues specifically on the Retina, if you have a high-res iMac, one of the 5K ones like I do, this really, really should address most of those issues. So I'm not going to say, you know, PowerPoint's never going to crash for you in the future, but this is a huge step forward in just making it more stable.
I wonder if that will be anything like, you know, on the PC side, we always run 32-bit PowerPoint on 64-bit operating system.
Well, I'll say I would love to move to the 64-bit setup. I mean, the operating systems are all 64-bit. It's how much the Microsoft Office can address, you know, what's its bandwidth. And we're really limiting it to the 32-bit. For the most part, most of our computers, the vast majority, are still 32-bit installs because the add-in manufacturers, or I should say the add-in developers, are still at 32-bit add-ins. And we use the functionality of add-ins so highly in our design process to expedite design that it actually is worth it to stay at the 32-bit. Now, there's some other things as well, video drivers, or I should say QuickTime if you're using MOVs and whatnot. Those also were only 32-bit. I think Apple kind of drug its feet on getting a 64-bit Windows version of QuickTime Player. But that's actually being overcome now because Windows 10 has an MP4 engine built right into it. So I'm just really, really waiting for the day where I can move everything to the 64-bit because it does address so many things. Sandy, remember when we had that huge Red X issue going when we started rolling out? That was very much attributed to the 32-bit environment when we were talking with Microsoft. They tested it on 64-bit and they never saw it. Oh. We had to kind of convince them that people were using 32-bit. And then they're like, oh, well, it's a bandwidth issue. They did optimize the program to eliminate it, but they didn't see it because they run the 64-bit version internally, because that makes more sense, but it's just not a real world solution yet. On the Mac, Nolan, there's so few add-ins available. And from what I've seen, the add-ins that are available are all 32 and 64-bit compatible. So they're already ready to go. I mean, it's an interesting position for us to be in. You know, we want to run the highest end stuff, but yet we lose some functionality if we do.
So that's huge news. I think what's huge, it's a little tool add-in on PowerPoint, and that's the text highlighting tool. It's been in Word for years. We finally got it in PowerPoint. I mean, I want to stand up and cheer.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be so, so good not to have to go through all the little workaround hacks.
Well, I work with lawyers. They highlight stuff all the time. It's just an awesome tool to have. So I'm really excited about that.
Great for print-only presentations. And on-screen as well, but those print-only ones we were talking about.
This is one of those things we should make note of. It's only for Office 365 installs.
That's correct.
If you're
point.
You're not using the Office 365 version of PowerPoint. You don't get that functionality because Microsoft's only rolling it out in their latest and greatest. So, well, one last bit of news, and I'll follow Sandy with just this past week, and this is definitely only on the Insider. And as far as I know, it's Office Insiders, and it's done in waves. So even if you have the Office Inside, you may not, as of when this releases, have this feature yet. It's the integration of Morph into a new feature. So the Morph transition technology, I guess we would say, is now being used for a new release called Zoom. And it's like the Morph transition, but it adds a new level of visual styling, this time to hyperlinked images. So if you want to have your agenda slide, which is the absolute easiest way to describe this, you literally just click Zoom and you say, I want this slide, and this slide. It shows you little thumbnails of all of them. And it puts images of those slides on your agenda slide. You click the image and it just does this very elegant zoom up and into that slide. No pixelization. It's very smooth. It's using, as far as I know, the Morph transition. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really awesome. I'm pretty excited about it.
I would say, I would describe it as it allows you to, without a lot of manual work, which we're doing to date, it allows you to navigate your presentation like a website.
And some might say like Prezi.
Like Prezi, exactly.
In some ways, you can absolutely make things that people will say, oh, I'm glad you use Prezi with it.
It is not backward compatible, especially the slide, the show, section connection. If you open it in PowerPoint, you cannot, it does not automatically return.
You know, what I will say is this, this just got confirmed. It might have been just 2 days ago. The Presentation Guild just asked if I would host a special live webcast later this month in August with one of the program managers at Microsoft, who's going to basically demo and explain and take questions about Zoom. Mm-hmm. So we'll have details in the show notes or go to the Presentation Guild for details, because that's going to be really cool. It's literally going to be one of the actual Microsoft program managers, not a PR person demoing something. It's going to be one of the people that works on this feature. And I'm pretty excited. I got asked to be the person to, you know, host them and make sure we're talking about real world stuff. So
that's exciting.
I'm very excited about that. It'll be a fun one. It'll be great. It worked into my calendar too, so it's even better because I'm home all month.
I don't know who you're working with, Troy, or who's going to be doing it, but the only time I was out at Microsoft maybe 3-4 months ago, and I stopped by the office to talk to them, this was one of the features that that we were talking about and looking at. So it was really nice to see it kind of in process.
Yeah, I think it's going to get better too. And as Sandy did mention, this is one of the new tools that really leverages sections. Mm-hmm. And I think sections in presentation design are very underutilized. And the Zoom tool really leverages the power of organization in that respect. So there's a lot of cool tools. So we'll leave it with that. I've got some demos coming up on the PowerPoint blog, which has been dark for almost a month now. It's all got everything spooled up for all of August. One of them is a demo of Zoom, and then we'll have this thing with the Presentation Guild. And I will, I'm sure it'll be all over the Presentation Summit later in the year as well. This is a classic presentation rule, using those air quotes. This is a classic presentation rule that is never really agreed upon or followed when it is set up. Today, we want to talk about our guidelines for font size, which includes when to follow a font sizing rule, why a font size specification is really difficult to turn into a rule, and some tips for what everyone should consider with font sizes and presentation design. So let's have a great conversation about fonts.
Okay, let's start by first defining presentation, because how a presentation is going to be used is going to affect any design specifications, including what font size is best.
I think we've talked about this before, but for me, I say there are two types of presentation, on-screen and print. So if something's going to be in print, and I also include PDF in this category, it's going to be read by a single individual at about 18 inches from their eyes. That means your text can and should be much, much smaller.
Exactly. A presentation can be delivered in the traditional sense on screen, via webinar, or print. And I would argue that in a less traditional sense, anytime you interact with someone else, and this is not relevant to this discussion, but I had to say it, it's a presentation. But that's not, of course, what we're talking about today. Excuse me.
But we agree.
Thank you.
Okay, there is projective presentations. then really big projected presentations, things that, you know, I get to work on. And there is a huge difference. So even that can be an impact. I do think the bigger variable is like a webinar presentation, taking size into consideration, you know, a webinar presentation, and then a stage projected presentation, whether it be large or really, really large. The density of content and the font size should be different for each. In other words, you need to design and tailor for the actual end use. We also need to note that not all fonts are the same. I mean, I just kind of mentioned that screen size is different, and the fonts themselves are they can be vastly different. What is 30 point in one font may be huge, but 30 point in another font could be considerably smaller.
For example, Times Roman versus Arial. Times Roman is much smaller.
So I did this one. This is a great one because I know, Sandy, you'd mentioned a font name a couple of episodes ago that was great. I used this one just this past week called Swing Dancer. It's the name of a font. It's a cursive or handwritten looking font. It's for a recent award show. The first name was in Swing Dancer. So, you know, John is kind of in a fancy script. And then the last name was in more of a sans serif, just standard Verdana. Verdana is considerably larger than Swing Dancer. So if there was a rule applied that all fonts had to be 100 point, well, the first name would be almost too small to read, and the last name would be too large to even fit on the screen because of real estate space. So you do have to take these things into consideration before creating a rule, or they may be a reason to modify a font sizing rule.
Yeah, and in theory, going back to what you said before about screen size, you in theory could have a 10-point font that is 10 feet high, depending on how you're projecting it. So having a rule with point size is not always possible.
Yeah, it's there are some limitations to creating a hard and fast rule is what we're trying to say here.
So in addition, the purpose of different slide layouts means that they're not all created the same.
Well, as example, that 28-point font that you may be choosing to use is kind of too small for a title or section divider slide, but it's really good for the content slides. So but you may want to use a larger font, or the template may spec a larger size font for those title and section divider slides. They just don't have the content density. So it should be a factor in kind of font choice sizing.
Yes. And as Nolan mentioned earlier, that same 28 point font might be reduced to 16 or less in a print environment.
The end use of the presentation is a factor. What the actual layout is being used is going to be a factor. So it's hard to put one font. You know, it's usually we need a minimum font size of this. And there's just so many factors.
This is where we as designers do what lawyers do all the time with giving an answer, which is it depends.
Yeah.
My father's a lawyer. And every single time I ask him a question, his answer is, well, it depends.
Going down the path of things are not all created equal. Our first point about how the presentation is going to be used is going to also impact or be impacted by the screen size. So even a print document can vary if it's an 8.5 by 11. We just did one where a presentation was put on basically note cards. So they are like half an 8.5 by 11. So they are, what would that be? 8.5 by 5.5 tall. You know, that's a much smaller area. It was still 16 by 9-ish, but there's that. And then you're going to have these examples of just huge screens.
You know, I just want to throw this in here. There's an old graphic designer's trick for when a client says, give more emphasis to something, you know, be it a logo or an element on a layout. And, you know, you might think, oh, we'll give more emphasis. We have to bold it or we have to make it bigger. But actually the trick is a lot of times to make it smaller. So if you had a big title that was, let's say, 100 points and the client said, give more emphasis to that, you might actually take it down to 90 or 85 points, because by doing that, you're increasing the negative space around it, which is actually what gives it more emphasis. If your text is constantly, you know, being pushed out to the edges, sometimes it gets lost. So sometimes the way to make things more readable on a screen or a layout is to make it smaller.
Wasn't sure where you're going with that whole description at the beginning there, and I totally agree. As another example, to follow up on that, is, and this is all about the size of the screen is going to impact it. I worked on this just awesome, beautiful keynote address presentation for an executive team. Lots of images, minimal text, no bullet lists. It was really wonderful. all of it was just a standard 16x9 page setup. Client approved everything before we went to show site. But what I did not know is that that 16x9 aspect ratio was huge. I mean, really huge. It was it was almost 40 feet wide. I don't remember the exact thing. So that would make it 20 plus feet tall. It was in a pretty shallow room, so the audience wasn't sitting super far away. So you had these just massively huge screens set at stage level, so they weren't even floating. So that awesome looking 40-point text when we reviewed it on my laptop was really just super intimidating when it went up on screen in the actual room. It kind of felt like it was going to fall off the screen and squash the audience or the presenter, because it was massive. So I had to go through the entire presentation and reduce the font size, adjusting all the layouts just to be kind of a friendlier look. So not to what you were saying, Nolan, it wasn't to make it more emphasis, it was to make it less intimidating and audience friendly. But what looked good in one environment, my laptop for review sessions, did not translate well to the actual show site experience.
Okay, so we know there's too big, and I asked this next question somewhat rhetorically, but is there too small?
Go ahead, be rhetorical.
What's your answer, Nolan?
is there a too small a size? Yes, yeah. Of course. I don't like to put rules of to things like this, but if you're using 5-point type because you need it, you know, in order to fit everything on the page, you have too much on the page and that's too small. Very often we'll see 5 points or even smaller type for like legal languages and disclaimers. And I'm going to bring this back to lawyers and my father. This is the kind of thing he would answer. So I've asked lawyers a number of times. I said, so if you have to include like some legal language, like, you know, we're not responsible for whatever, you know, all that stuff you see like at the bottoms of pages. And I said, if you have to include it, but it's unreadable, isn't that legally as though you're not including it at all? And can't we just remove it? And their answer always is, just leave it on. I'm not going to get into that discussion, but it drives me nuts to see something in like 4 or 5 point type. Oh, well, we have to put it on for the lawyers, but it's not readable. I mean, it might be barely readable in print, but on screen, it's literally physically not readable. And yet they insist on putting it up.
Yes, there is too small. Second, you asked a lawyer if they would commit to something, Nolan, and you never got an answer. So no surprise there. Third, I would put a minimum at like 10 point for an Arial or Calibri style font. And even then, I really cringe at saying something like that because it's not going to be legible by many viewing the presentation. Print presentation, yes. Webinar presentation, maybe. It depends on if it's full screen, if it's running a little window. Full-size presentation, depends on where you're sitting in the audience at that point. So to your point, Nolan, about there being something too small if it's needed, we deal with this like endlessly, and it's with medical references. That super small 8-point type at the bottom left that lists the source data.
Yep.
You can't read it. It's not really... It's not helping the audience outside letting them know that, oh, somebody that data came from somewhere. I can't read what it is. So is it really needed? Can't we just put it in the presenter notes or off screen? And of course, the answer is no one will commit to it. So yes, we have to put it on there and do this little teeny type that is smaller than should be allowed.
Right. Sandy, you do a lot for financial companies, right?
Right. And the rule there is that the legal text at the bottom cannot appear to have a different treatment than the body copy. So if we're getting to 5, 6, 8 points and you've got a 22-point body copy, that appears to be different. That used to create a lot of big problems, as you can imagine, because we would have a paragraph of legal copy. They've evolved, however, where now we can place a 10-point statement at the bottom that says, see important financial disclosure information at the end of the presentation, and that disclosure information gets a full page or 2 or 3 or 4.
And at least somebody's evolving.
Yeah, somebody's evolving.
We should talk about that because in the pharma medical device field, we're not allowed to create, you know, that end of document listing of everything because slides live on as their separate entity. So the data needs to go with the slide. So therefore, a presentation is able or made to be broken apart. It's kind of an interesting conversation I had with an in-house legal team. Something to talk about.
Yeah,
another
we should
time.
Talk about that because I have ideas.
I don't think we have answers, but we should talk about it.
So that's all right. So that's body copy and headers and all that stuff. What about charts and tables and sizes in there? I mean, personally, I think you can actually get away with much smaller type there because, for example, if you see a y-axis that goes 0, 10, 20, 30, you can just read those numbers more clearly, and you don't necessarily have to read all of them to understand what that axis is.
Exactly. I agree. But I do start monitoring at 16 to 18. If I have a traditional chart or a traditional table, I start questioning what the content is at 16 to 18 points because I look at ways then to change the graphic.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I like to develop slides so the key information, maybe it's next year's projected numbers, is the larger call out. So there's a quick takeaway from a chart or a table that the audience can, you know, they can identify and then move on with focusing back on the presenter versus staring at this mass of small font size data and trying to identify what's important or what the real story is. In this case, if I have a big call out, I sometimes opt to leave the data really small if the, you know, the end client says we have to include it all. First thing I want to do is strip it all away and make a really clean
remove
story.
All the chart junk.
Yeah, but if we can't, if I can make it small enough so it looks irrelevant and there's a large call out or a couple of items that are big, people identify, oh, those are all I need to know. I'm going to get those in my head, and now I'm going to go back to listening to what the presenter said. So, you know, everything else is kind of ignored with confidence is the term I like to use. So let's move to what are our rules for designing font sizes in the presentations we get to work on.
Yep, I'll start with building a template, which is different. And I think we'll address that as we go along here. But if I'm building a corporate PowerPoint template using a sans serif font, I'll design typically the headline at 30 to 32 points and the body copy at 22 to 24 points. Now, our colleague David Parody would disagree with this, and we can, if you want to, take a look at his page on Think Outside the Slide. But I'll set the bullet points for each level in decreasing sizes at as small as 16 points. Of course, I always hope that no one will go that low, but as builders of templates, you know that if we don't program it, someone will for sure make it up. Put it, something really weird there, real weird bullet point or whatever. So anyway, I try to control that as much as possible. I also set the default text box at 18 points, considering that this will typically be used for labels and captions next to an image or other content. But if I'm creating more freestyle presentation, I'll use larger fonts.
That's, you know, there's so many things I'd like to ask you about in that statement. So let me ask, I got to ask three questions really quick, or maybe just two. So your 16-point rule, is that based on the fifth indent level, or do you go all the way down to the ninth with, you know, PowerPoints? Because PowerPoint shows you in the Microsoft default five indent levels, but really it goes to nine in the programming.
Exactly. So what I'll do is program nine, five through nine being 16 points.
Oh, okay. Okay, then I'm right in line.
Yep.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, so here's our rule as we develop, because we develop lots and lots of templates. We take not the primary bullet, which is your largest one, but the one right below it, so your first level indent, that becomes the size for the default shape or the default text box.
Good. Okay, good idea.
So it varies, but it always means it's going to be large because we don't allow super small type unless we know it's going to print. Yeah, that's interesting. After I know what a presentation will be used for is when we're going to make that decision. And if it's a live audience presentation, I like to know the staging and the audience seating specs. And as example for what I mentioned earlier, because I didn't get that information. I designed this awesome presentation. My team did a phenomenal job. We get there on site and we're like, oh my gosh, that looks like the welcome is going to fall over and kill the presenter. So I base my design on a lot of different specs, which is to say the font size rules for that project, are they large enough for the person in the last row or the furthest person away from the viewing if it's a live audience, and are they friendly enough for the person in the front row? So there's a lot of, you know, kind of thought that goes into it, I guess.
Troy, I've seen mathematical equations being used to calculate size, and I'm not sure if it's specific, I can't remember if it's specific to font or if it just relates to slide size, but it's based on room size and screen size. Am I just dreaming this? Have you ever used
I think I've seen something like that. I don't know what it is, though.
I think that sounds like another Dave Peretti thing. Okay. He has some great calculators for content and perception. I don't know that exact one, but for me, kind of more of an experience, and it's all in my mind.
I'm kind of with you as well, Troy. The variation on what you kind of said is, I always tell people, design for the 75-year-old in the back of the room, not the 25-year-old in the front of the room.
That's funny.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, and Guy Kawasaki, we've all heard of Guy. He actually has a formula for optimal font size. He takes the oldest person in the room, so similar to what you're doing, Nolan, but he divides that by 2. And
this is funny.
It is. And
I've heard him say it. This is great. This is a really good rule, actually.
Well, it is, but think about it. I once ran into a client who took this as gospel, and he wanted all of his bullet points to be 40 points. So you can imagine.
Depends
what
on the font. Depends on the use. There's a lot of variables.
Do you have to do a survey of your audience beforehand?
I know. What's the age? What's the average age? I guess we do. We should be asking those demographics, but that's crazy. Okay.
That's awesome. Yeah. So if we have a 20-year-old, we're allowed to use 10-point font.
That's exactly right.
And you know what? There's got to be some corollary to that with just the amount of information, because the younger person you have, the attention span goes down.
Right.
Oh. Well, then you get. My father, just talked to him a week ago. He had, I'm going to assume it was LASIK eye treatment. I'm not sure what, but his vision is like back to incredible again. And I won't say age brackets, but he should be up there around the 35-point level based on that. But I don't think he needs it anymore. You know, medical advances.
All right. So do we have any PowerPoint tricks for specific to PowerPoint for dealing with font sizes? I'll say the one of mine is I hate text boxes when they shrink to fit. I think it leads to bad habits. So when we make templates, all text boxes never shrink to fit. So if text starts running off the page at whatever it might be, 14, 16 point, that's a hint that they're writing too much.
Okay, and my trick is thinking all caps. It's very trendy right now to be using all caps, and it can be difficult to read in serif fonts and smaller sizes. So I try to limit all caps to larger font sizes. If you do use all caps, consider the use of character spacing and line spacing with font sizes. And no matter what the font size, avoid paragraphs of text.
Yeah, that's actually, we're doing that a lot these days. All caps with like 2-point or 3-point expanded spacing. It makes titles look really nice.
Yep.
If anyone ever receives a presentation or template from me that has the text properties to resize type on overflow, you know it's not me. I'm signaling for help because I never use that. It's just not a good option. So my suggestion is work from a professional template created by somebody that understands the audience view and use the template font sizing presets as the guideline, because it should be optimized for the type of presentation and the environment it's going to be used in, because there's a lot of thought and effort that goes into everything we create based on all those variables. So yeah, we don't have a single font size rule besides consider the font size rule for that presentation, use, and environment. So as a wrap up, fonts can be too small, and unfortunately they often are. One topic we did not discuss, although we have previously, is if using a custom fonts, if you're using a custom font, there are a lot of bad things that can happen to slides if that font is not installed on a computer. So this is kind of a cautionary tale about if you're looking at a presentation, you're deciding all the fonts are too big or too small, and you know lots of other things are gone wrong, make sure it's not a custom font, because you may be editing to a replacement font, and suddenly when somebody has the real font, now all their sizing is going to be wrong. So there's just a lot of back and forth on figuring out what to do with what is the right font size for a presentation. Okay, last episode we had to skip the pro tips and tech tips due to some scheduling time on basically our part. So we're happy to have this fun section of both of these in our episode again. Somebody start us off with pro tips.
Okay, this is an easy one. Use Arrange All in the View tab to quickly view two or more presentations side by side.
Oh, You know what's funny? I may not have actually known. This is really bad. No, I actually didn't know you could do that. I always just do it manually.
Nope, because it does with a button. It automatically sizes it to fit your screen, and they are perfectly placed side by side.
Cool.
I'm going to have to play with that because I always do it manually. And if you're on a Windows, I don't think this works for you, Nolan. The Windows and the left and the right arrow to make things go half screen or full screen is just awesome.
Like, to snap to the edge of the screen. Yeah, so I do that all the time when dragging things.
I'm assuming that View tab one does that. Sandy, I got something new to play with today. Thank you.
Okay, we could do a whole podcast on page numbering and footers, which we might, but here's a quick one. There are actually two ways to insert page numbers onto your slides, and the standard one, when you have a template, it gives you a page number box in your master. And if you are on a slide, for example, and you have nothing selected, and you go to insert page number from your ribbon, or slide number rather, it's going to bring up the header and footer box, and you can just check on, hey, you know, start your slide numbers there. And it will, wherever, you know, in your template, the page number is, it will start numbering. Now, that's a box you can move around and you can highlight and you can change on a slide-by-slide basis, which is good and bad because we've all been those places where we just throw our hands up. Like, page numbers are different on every slide. Somebody else worked on it and you just don't know what to do. And you don't have to put them in manually on each slide. If that happens and you want to put something in the master that will appear the same way on every single slide, guaranteed, and you won't be able to touch it, just like putting a logo in your master, go to your master, insert a text box wherever you want it to be, and highlight the text box. So basically put your cursor in that text box and then hit slide number. And that will actually insert the slide number within that text box, and that text box is locked.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Love
so
that.
Every once in a while, like if you just, I can't fix the page numbers, just turn them off on your master and then insert it manually and it's locked.
My pro tip, I'm going to stick with the custom fonts thing. PowerPoint really just doesn't have a good user experience or UX when a presentation has a custom font, because the custom fonts are not installed on the computer. And when you open the presentation, it doesn't really warn you. So my tip is to create a slide at the beginning of the presentation that in big text says, this presentation uses custom fonts. Then list the custom font in the custom font. But here's the real tip. Then take that text box of the font name and copy paste special as a ping and put it beside it. And we put a little note that says, if the text on the left doesn't look like the text on the right, which is a picture, you're missing the font.
That's good.
Because the whole custom font thing, just as you can tell, it's top of mind.
You've been burned.
Hurt us a couple of times this past few weeks. So there it is.
That's a great, great idea. I've done that a few times.
So pro tips all about using presentation design software. Let's move on to tech tips.
Okay, I'll start with Prisma. It's an iOS app that applies amazing treatments to photos. The quality is excellent. And so much so that I'm looking for opportunities to use those treatments in a PowerPoint presentation.
Cool.
I haven't heard of that one. That sounds awesome. Let's see here. A tech tip is, mine's really practical, but it is an iOS app in suit. Our daughter just got back for an amazing 12 days in Cologne, Germany. Sounds like it was a great, great trip all around. But the really helpful app for time zones that we use is called Synchronize. It's a little pink icon. We'll put a link to it in the notes. I know it's for the iOS. I'm not sure about other phone mobile devices, but basically it's a nice world clock and it shows your local time, and you could set it up for as many places around the world as you want. So it says, hey, when it's 8 a.m. here, what time is it there? But the real cool feature is at the bottom, there's a little timeline, a little clock swipeable. So if it's 8 a.m. here and I want to know what time it is going to be 8 a.m. for her, I just swipe it along and it changes all the times and the time zones that, you know, you've selected. So I can find out when it lands at 8 a.m. for her, I look at my time, local time, and I go, oh, I'm not calling her then. So actually, I guess that wouldn't be bad. 8 a.m. in Cologne, it's a 9-hour difference. So that'd be 11 p.m. here, and I'm usually up and finishing off my day. So
it's great if you have international clients. I'm always doing the math in my head, setting up meetings. Mine's also an iOS app. I feel like I'm late to the game on this, but I have, in the last few months, become a huge fan of Waze. I was on Google Maps forever, and people would say, oh, Waze is great. I'm like, nah, Google Maps is just fine. Waze is awesome in so many ways, but I'll just say the main thing for me is it gets you there faster, and it takes you on shorter roads or through paths that Google just won't do. Google wants to keep you on main roads. So my favorite example is that I'm only about a half mile or a mile from the parkway right here, and there are a couple of main entrances. But when I'm using Waze, Waze will take me not through the main entrance. It'll take me through a back parking lot of McDonald's that's actually a rest stop. So it avoids all the traffic, and it takes me through, not through the drive-through, but basically the parking lot, which is incredible. And I've had taxi drivers and Uber drivers that I say, no, just trust me, we're going through McDonald's, and it saves me a couple minutes. So I love that about it.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design or show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, now in its eighth year, thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. If you're looking for training in presentation or data visualization, give us a call. That's what we do.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz and my blog at pptwhizblog, or just search for Sandy Johnson or Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser, and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.